Welcome to Season 4, Episode 13 of the Tux Radar Podcast. I'm Ben Everard.
I'm Gary Walker.
I'm Jonathan Roberts.
And I'm Efrain Hernandez.
Mummy and Dad, you're away this week as they're off at OzCon, so Uncle Effie's in charge.
Wait, if Andrew and Graham are Mummy and Daddy, which one's which? Who's for Mummy and who's for Daddy?
I think Graham's the Daddy.
Oh. Big Daddy. Is that like Weekend at Bernie's? The
Effies. It's exactly like that.
Yes.
A whole week.
Yeah, I got a dead corpse somewhere as well. Hidden in the cupboard.
Okay, so moving on to the... Well, sorry, hang on. I forgot to say what we've got.
In this episode.
So, in this episode, we have the news where we'll catch you up to date with all the latest goings on in the Linux world. We've got our discovery of the Fortnite. We've got the halfway reminder. We have rants and raves where me and John will... be moaning and happy saying about stuff. We're not going to speak your brains, are we?
We are speaking our brains
all the way from America. There's an open ballot and one last thing. So, without further ado, John Roberts, bring us the news.
Okay, so in this week's news, Steam Penguins, Valve has made it official that they're bringing the Steam client and the Source game engine to Linux. Their initial plan is to port Left 4 Dead 2 and the Steam engine to Ubuntu, get it running natively. It's already running natively, they're just working on performance. So finally, this is official, and I think it's just great news for Linux and Linux gaming in general. People who dual boot with Windows just for gaming, doesn't matter, it won't matter, hopefully in the near future. We'll see some real progress on that.
Yeah, it's great news, but I don't think there's any real surprises there. I think...
Yeah, no surprise, but it's good news.
It's good news.
Second also on the news today, Jolla, a new company has been formed by the team who were working on Mego at Nokia. And since they got let go from Nokia, they've spun out their own company, Jolla, and are going to try and take Mego on to new and better things. And they've just recently signed a distribution deal with one of China's larger mobile phone manufacturers, Dphone, I think. So Mego lives, open source, mobile phone OSs live. There's hope for the world yet.
Have they provided any more information? Last time I looked, they just had a holding page on their website.
Yeah, I think all they have is their LinkedIn page. So if you do want more information, LinkedIn is a place to go. But by all accounts, the N9 with Mego on, Graham said, was absolutely fantastic. So
my question would be if they're going to launch their own smartphones, would they be cheaper as well? Because I don't know. The manufacturer in China is an operating system was really relieved from a big company. So,
did you say they were launching in China or signing with Chinese distribution?
No, I think they've got I think it's a Chinese manufacturer who's agreed to produce the phones.
Okay.
I think that's the case. I'm not 100% sure. I should really look into the news stories more before each episode. But that's the rough gist of it. Anyway, next story. You can now buy Raspberry Pis in bulk. There's no order limit. They're producing 4,000 a day, which is 20,000 every 5 working days. That's 80,000 a month. And over the course of a year, Ben, how much is 80,000 times 12?
Get your calculator.
960,000.
Yeah?
There we go.
Spot on. None of us actually know if that's right, but we'll take his word for it.
Well, we'll assume they're going to continue ramping up production through the year as well.
Yeah, so now you can buy as many Raspberry Pis as you like, and you can start to build your own supercomputer. You can do whatever the hell you like. It's just, I don't know what you're going to do with all those Pis, but...
I suppose that is good news for small businesses, isn't it? Mm. The ones that don't have big budgets and they don't want to buy expensive computers or anything like that. Yeah. They can actually use Raspberry Pis as their desktops.
Yeah, and also for schools and things as well. You're right, actually, this opens up the Raspberry Pi market. This level of production means they can now get on with their original mission of getting them into schools, into children's hands. And
well, these are still the beta boards, don't forget.
Yeah, they're but once they've got this level of production going, when they transition into the final board, this is another big step forward, and I guess the Raspberry Pi Foundation's original goals.
Yeah, and the word on the forum is people are getting them after about 5 days.
Oh, wow.
Order, so they're speeded up.
I'm doing the Raspberry Pi tutorial this month and doing it about SSH tunneling and reverse tunneling and things. I'll talk about this a bit more later, but that alone is, I think, a pretty good reason to get a Raspberry Pi, a really great, secure, reliable way to get a safe internet connection from wherever you are in the world, I think the £25 for a Raspberry Pi makes that alone makes it worth it. So,
so is the price still the same even in bulk?
Yeah.
I don't know what the delivery charges, how they scale, but the actual price of the unit,
yeah, because they make basically no profit on it. Mm. I did see a story though. There's more talk of them moving production back to the UK as well in the near future, but I think it's more a rumor than anything.
Yeah, because their reasoning was the tax law.
And yeah,
as far as I know, there hasn't been any change on
No, but I think it depends if I'm not sure if they can build up a big enough order. I think it was a question of producing a certain number in the UK would be affordable, but producing less than that wouldn't be, and you know, very small runs, very large runs could be made affordable in between, not so much.
It's usually the other way around. Small runs are affordable in the UK, big ones aren't.
I'm not 100% sure, but there was details of, you know, how much they could do in the UK and it would work. But I think that's really exciting and really cool. And there's also talk of a open source graphics driver for the graphics card. So finally, we might get some accelerated X on our Pis, which would be really cool. Another very exciting news story, Redphone, an Android app which provides encrypted telephone calls, has just been made open source. Any thoughts on this?
I haven't actually seen this story at all.
Well, it's... It's a really cool story because, you know, encrypted telephone calls from your mobile phone. If, you know, you're in, you know, whatever situation, there's good reasons to encrypt your phone calls from time to time. And the fact that the client has been made open source is important because, you know, with security and with encryption protocols, there's no way of knowing it's fully secure if it's proprietary. There's no way of knowing what backdoors exist in Skype protocols or in RIM's instant messaging, you know, BlackBerry Messenger stuff. So open sourcing the encryption and the client is just guaranteed way to improve security, I think, or at least to guarantee, give you confidence in what's going on rather than feeling uncertain and untrusting of the company behind it.
I think that comes late, isn't it, for the governor of the Bank of England and the main guys from Barclays.
Well, you know, then we can help them out as well, so.
Yeah, I don't know, for my money, if I was that concerned, I'd probably still use the Tor client on Android and do some online chatting personally.
And do it by text rather than voice.
Yeah, but maybe I'm just extra super paranoid.
Oh, at least there are options out there. This is cool.
Extra software and open source is always good.
Yeah. Project Sputnik, the laptop from Dell, which is designed from the beginning to run Ubuntu perfectly, has just entered beta, Ben told me this morning. So,
yeah, it's a new high-end laptop from Dell that's being targeted at developers initially, so it's not cheap. If memory serves, it's over the $1,000 mark.
Right.
But for that, you get a hell of a lot of hardware. So it's competing really with the MacBook Airs and the MacBook Pros of the world.
It's that sort of size, the MacBook Air sort of size, isn't it? It looks fantastic.
It looks good.
I'd love one of these. I must restrain myself from buying one though, because hardware lust is not a good thing. Final news story. This has really been lightning news today. Ouya Android console breaks Kickstarter record. This is really cool. These guys, I say it's really cool. I have mixed feelings about it, but general premise is Kickstarter is a website where you post your ideas and you post your, you know, proof that you can do it, and you say if 1,000 people will donate £5 a month or whatever, you know, 10,000 people donate £100 or whatever, once you get enough people to bid, the money will only then be taken from your credit card. So it's a great way to crowdsource funding for your development projects and your comic books and your movies and your games consoles. And Ouya is an Android-based console, which is meant to be open source, open hardware, partially, maybe not for graphics chips. And they're hoping to make it $99. And the idea is to open up, kind of bring all those Android devs who've started to learn game development on mobile platforms and to open up the main TV screen in the house to them without them having to pay extortionate prices for PlayStation or Xbox SDKs, and really liberate game development on the living room TV and get it out to the masses. So it's an exciting and interesting project, and it's open hardware and it's Android.
Yeah, I mean, obviously on the hardware side of things, there's now 101 of these little ARM-based devices running Android. But I think what this does is provides one unified platform for game developing.
Yeah.
So developers aren't trying to optimize it for 100 different devices. It gives them one thing to target.
Although, what, because it's Android or because it's one device?
Because it's one hardware, so you don't have to worry about whether or not the hardware will have the specs or
do you
whatever.
Think, I see what you mean, yeah. But do you think we'll see lots of clones of this up here and you might get similar problems?
Possibly, but that means developers can target the main one, and if you want to try and run it on a cheaper clone, you're welcome to, but if it doesn't
work... $99 anyway. Yeah. What also looks cool about this is the controller paraphrasing. It's a proper games controller, and it's kind of an integrated touchpad, so that games that are coming from mobile phones, you'll still be able to use them with touch via the controller on your big screen TV. So I think it's one to watch. I'll be interested to see how it develops.
Yeah. And just in more Kickstarter news as well, at the moment it's only for projects based in the US, but they did announce... Yeah. Last week that as in the UK we'll be able to launch our own projects in the autumn.
That's cool. And not till the autumn.
Not till the autumn. Okay.
Well, still, it's better than nothing. That's exciting.
And it's an excellent website. I mean, by some metrics they're now the largest publisher of graphic novels in America.
Really?
Yeah.
But I guess certain niches it works very well for, where you don't need tons and tons of money but enough to make your time worthwhile.
Yeah.
That's really cool. And that is the news this week in Linux land, this fortnight.
Yay. Excellent. Wow.
And now it's time for the bumper OzCon special discovery of the week. Who would like to go first?
I'll go first. Well, for me it's the discovery of the 6 weeks, as I've missed the last couple of podcasts. So my first discovery is... being able to use two arms again. It's awesome. So I had my arm in cast for about 7 weeks in the end, and it's now come off. And
my question is why one of the arms looks a little bit metally.
I've been upgraded. But this does actually, surprisingly enough, have Linux-related consequences. Because we've been joking for a while about GNOME Shell's developers' decision about the shutdown button, about how you have to press Alt to get it. And actually, that's a real problem when you've only got one arm, because you need one hand for your mouse. And then how do you press Alt to shut your computer down?
No.
So for 7 weeks, I just couldn't turn off GNOME 3.
And your computer's now really hot.
It does, yes. So, I mean, it's a bit of a joke, but it is generally something to consider for interface designers, the usability. Because, you know, it's a bit of a joke, but I keep saying it's a bit of a joke.
It is something that the GNOME developers put a lot of thought in. Sorry, this is really weird. I got headphones on? Oh. Anyway, they do put a lot of thought into it, and usability is something they tried to bake in from the very beginning, and it's going to be enabled by default in future releases. But, yeah, that seems like something they've really overlooked.
Yeah, and it was generally a problem from an accessibility point of view. With only one arm, you couldn't shut it down.
Yeah.
Not easily. You had to sort of hold the mouse and press the button with the same hand.
Yeah.
I mean, we really shouldn't be having these problems in 2012.
No, I agree completely.
But anyway, moving on to my other discoveries. I've got three for you this 6 weeks.
Wow.
Which is one for each of the two podcasts that I've missed.
Come on.
The next, Tails, the Tor encrypted version of Debian that runs live, you may know from our cover disk, now has a stealth mode, so you can run it and it looks like Windows XP, so people don't know you're running a super sneaky stealth Tor, which could, again, in the UK it's a bit of a joke, but in some countries around the world you may need to run a public computer with people not knowing that you're doing it in an encrypted fashion. So it's more good news from that project. And my third discovery of the week is that it's Nelson Mandela's birthday today.
Yay!
Wow. I say that as we record this, it's Nelson Mandela's birthday. By the time you listen to it, it won't be. So happy birthday.
Birthday.
Yeah. So yeah, happy birthday, Nelson.
Yeah, feliz cumpleaños.
I've discovered Mixcraft Pro Studio 6. What's that, I hear you ask? Well, it's a powerful music production and multi-track recording workstation that comes packed with thousands of music loops and dozens of audio effects and virtual instruments.
Gary is a human press release.
And it's enabling us to record this podcast, hopefully, while Graham and Andrew are in America. Unfortunately, I've only had it for a day, so I don't really know how to use it yet, but I'm assured it works on Wine, so it is fully usable with Linux. It's got an excellent range of VST plugins and things like Mini Moog synthesizers. It's a really great tool. It seems a little bit heavy on CPU usage, but from my playing with it until 2 o'clock this morning trying to record my new version of Dark Side of the Moon, it seems like a pretty good piece of software. I'm looking forward to using it.
You said as well that it was actually the manufacturer who said to you it works with Wine.
Yeah, the good people at Acoustica in California who sent over the software for review. They made a point of checking with their... They've got a dedicated Linux expert there, And they checked with him and they've assured me it works fine on Linux machines with Wine.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, Afi, what have you been discovering this fortnight?
I don't even know what else to say, to be honest, after the comments and Doug's radar. My discovery is really not related to Linux, just for a change. I play guitar and I try desperately to sort of improve myself gradually, but I reached that level in which I need tuition, and I found a really good website called guitarraviva.com. Basically, it is just a series of video tutorials, free video tutorials, really well produced, really well explained. The guy is actually, the guy teaching showing the tutorials is actually quite. It feels quite friendly. It feels like you got a mate in the house trying to teach you guitar and goes through techniques, and it's actually the production of the videos which is really interesting as well. If I'm gonna compare it to something, it would be the Apple iLife music tutorials, but nicer, without the pretensions of the people teaching you an instrument. And it is really good because it's also in Spanish. So if you're an English speaking individual, you might find some of the songs pretty much unknown. But they also do several, I don't know, famous songs such as, I don't know, Wonderwall by Oasis and so on and so on. And it's really good. It's really good. That's my discovery of yes, guitarraviva.com.
So soon I'll be able to record your album with Mixcraft Pro Studio 6.
Absolutely. You're gonna have first track is gonna be La Cucaracha, and then the second one's gonna be I don't know, La Bamba.
Awesome.
So my discovery is Auto SSH, and it's a really cool, I think it's a bunch of shell script wrappers around SSH, that A, will make sure that the connection stays alive, but B, you can put it in on an Ubuntu Debian-based system in etc network, ifapp.d, and you can drop a script in there with Auto SSH launched, and it will keep trying to relaunch the SSH connection until there's a network connection found on that device, on that interface. So it's a great way to automatically configure a SSH tunnel to launch when you get a network connection, and do other cool stuff like that. It's an ideal way to create a Dropbox or to violate your corporate firewall policies, so have fun with it.
So, those awesome discoveries bring us to the halfway point of this podcast. But so we've still got to come. Rants and raves, where myself and John will be complaining and being happy about stuff. We have Speak Your Brains, we have Open Ballot, and one last thing. So still plenty to come. So, moving swiftly on to rants and raves. John, have you managed to think of anything yet?
Yes, I just have. Basically, okay, I need to set up a timer. Hold on, we got 1 minute each, right? So I'm going to rant for 1 minute on Linux software that does all the complicated functionality but doesn't bother to get the basic functionality right. And this is inspired by the fact that someone recently put a blog post on Planet Gnome, and they were just wanting to crop a video that they'd recorded of a screencast. All they wanted to do. They tried like four or five different pieces of video editing software on Linux that can do fades, it can add star and snow and do all kinds of weird effects that no one ever actually wants to see on their videos. But when it came to just cropping the video and getting the image size right, they found it almost impossible to do. Just, you know, get the basics right before you do the complicated things. No one cares about, you know, sort of a small minority of people do, but it's the whole 80-20 rule. No, you know, 80% of people only need, you know, 20% of the functionality of a piece of software. Get that basic 20% right, and 80% of the people will be happy. I think that's what a lot of Linux application developers really need to focus on and remember that rule. That is my rant, and that's 57, 58, 59, 60, 1 minute exactly. Ben, you are raving.
I was in IKEA the other day buying a piece of furniture, so I went down, picked up my package, took it to the checkout, took it home, put it together, and realised I'd managed to buy half a bed.
Why is half a bed?
Well, I didn't know it was half a bed, and this was a point. They'd sold me a package, not properly labelled, So obviously this is similar to package management in Linux. When you get a piece of software, you don't just want that piece of software, you want all the bits to make it work, to make it a complete thing. I've been installing some proprietary stuff and a similar thing happened. It brought down the binary things and then failed because of completely unmet dependencies. And this really made me realize just how awesome the package management is in open source software these days. You know, 5-10 years ago, you could get stuck in dependency hell trying to make sure every little thing works. But now, by and large, stuff works. And you sometimes forget just how awesome it is that you can just say apt-get, install, whatever you want. Make sure you've got your system set up properly. Get set. I've gone over, but it's that awesome it deserves an extra 10 seconds. So well done, package repository maintainers. I love you.
It's really interesting that Mike used to not take completely the opposite view of you, but he wished that for binary packages you had may have been a bad example, but he thought rather than dependencies, maybe this the libraries and things should get bundled into a single package like you can just for trying stuff out, because if you don't have access to the repositories, and you know, it just would simplify developers' lives and make everything a lot less complicated.
I mean, to a certain extent, the entire decision has been taken by the maintainers of glibc, who have done it in such a way that it doesn't really allow static compiling,
right?
And thinks pretty much everything relies on glibc,
right? Okay,
at the moment it's yeah. not really an option.
Okay, right. So for some stuff they do it, like Firefox you can get like that, and for the Tor bundle and things like that.
Yeah.
And it works really well in those situations, and I kind of think the whole idea of library management, I guess it makes it easier to keep your system up to date and secure.
Yeah.
But these days with large hard drives, space shouldn't be so much of a concern.
No, but imagine if, take glibc for an example, most things in your system use it. So when they make a change,
yeah.
you'd have to download every single package if it's yeah, statically yeah. compiled.
Yeah, but equally as well, if they change glibc and not all the packages get updated, then you could end up with broken packages as
it's
well.
It's true. But at the end of the day, the system we've got works, and it works well.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a few little, when you want to use odd packages, you can get stuck. But now, I mean, 99% of the stuff I want to use just works.
Oh, yeah, cool.
And it used to be, I remember when I first used my, I'm sorry, we've gone over to about 5 minutes now. I remember the days of searching through like third and 40 party repositories, trying to find the right RPM file. Nightmare.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're right. Package management today is awesome.
Did you manage to get out without buying an elderflower candle, a cheese grater, a table lamp and some frozen meatballs?
I bought nothing except what I wanted.
That's the holy grail.
You actually bought less than what you wanted.
Yeah, I bought less than what I wanted.
Okay, so with Graham away, he's emailed us his Speak Your Brains from OzCon. So here we go. The first one is from Rich. Rich, I don't know your surname, but thank you for your Speak Your Brains. He says, "Hi all, just wanted to share what I think sums up the Linux community most of the time quite nicely. I asked a question on Google Plus relating to Linux and a project I'm working on. I got a helpful and informative response, for which I thanked the poster. They got back to me with, no need to thank me, being part of the open source GNU copyleft community means without any question or doubt, someone is always there to help and educate without bias. This time just happened to be me. Next time it might be you. In other words, with Linux you actually have a community in which to depend on that are always willing to help, not some 800 number and 45 minutes of voice recordings to get to and someone who asks if you checked your power cord. Thinking about it, that statement is very true on a lot of occasions when you're dealing with people within the Linux Boss community. We rock." Really nice positive sentiment from Rich, and it couldn't be more true. I think support and community support is one of the best parts of Linux.
Yeah, definitely.
And the second Speak Your Brains we got is from Timothy Beamster, who says, "Hi Graham, today I found out why open source is so awesome. Well, I already knew, but this confirmed it even more to me. Yesterday, I installed an application called Kdocker, which docks any running application to the system tray, which is pretty awesome for applications which do not support system trays. It worked like a charm, but the only feature missing was mouse wheel support, open on mouse wheel up, close on mouse wheel down. So I tried to figure out the code, but as it was in a language I wasn't familiar with, I contacted the developer today for help. I just asked for a clue so I could create a patch myself, but barely 3 hours later I got an email back including an update in Launchpad which solves the problem. Furthermore, it was not only the bug fix, it also explained the new code to me, which is super awesome because today I learned a bit more C++. And yeah, last but not least, your show is awesome. Keep up the good work. Oh, thank you, Timothy. And again, that's nice, similar sentiments to the previous post, but developers are amazing when you get that kind of responsiveness to them. You know, I had a friend who was really into some audio stuff, and he was using one of the open source audio software. I can't think what it's called now. Anyway, the developer for that, he was constantly in dialogue with him and working on it and getting new features and tweaks and bug fixes. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, thank you for Speak Your Brains. If you want to see this section continue, send your messages to graham.morrison@futurenet.com, and he'll be back in 2 weeks' time to read out your Speak Your Brains. Thank you for those. Which makes it time for Open Ballot.
So, the question we asked is, what does your ideal distribution look like? You know, it's often a heated debate which is the best distribution. But if you got to design your own from the ground... If you got to design your own from the ground up, what features would you include and why? The first thing that struck me about all the comments we got is the amount of love there was for Arch. And yeah, it's a good reason. It's a good distro. It's it gives you control. The rolling update thing, rolling release, seems to attract a lot of love. John, you're an Arch user. Would you like to?
I think Arch is fantastic. It's actually probably the most stable distribution I've used, despite the rolling release model, which seems counterintuitive, but somehow it works. And like you say, the amount of control and the speed with which it can start up. And yeah, I think it's a really fun, really good, really useful distribution, perfect on the desktop. But what do some of the comments say?
Let's have a look. Well, Anonymous Penguin 2 simply says, exactly like Arch Linux. That's pretty straightforward. Green Tuxa says, rolling release like Arch. CJH says, Arch Bang, but with weekly rolling releases, and Fedora's Anaconda installer.
I guess one of the things about Arch in this question is that Arch and Gentoo basically are this question. You get to build your own distro from the ground up. You get to make virtually all the choices about what's going to go into it and how it's going to work. It's very similar to the kind of spirit that you see in Arch and things.
Yeah, well, with both of them, the only sort of bit you're stuck with, for want of a better word, is the package manager. So Pac-Man or Portage. Yeah. But yeah, they've... rolling releases seem to be very popular as well. But another thing that surprised me is the number of people who would have preferred to stick with older updates or older distros. Hiao says Mint 11. The Riddler or Bazza says PC Linux OS 2009. But then Jan says, never mind any distribution, I'll use anything surviving an upgrade. So perhaps a rolling release version could be for Jan as well.
It's interesting that people are choosing stuff from the past. Does that mean that Linux reached its peak in about 2009, 2010? It's all downhill from here. The introduction of Unity, GNOME 3, just throwing it out there.
2 years left in the job.
I think the magazine industry reached its peak a bit before then.
Fight days.
But then rock music reached its peak in 1989.
It's true.
So
1989. Yeah. What happened in 1989?
Everything.
Glasnost.
Everything happened in 1989. So yeah, basically, the future's rubbish, is what we've learned from this this open ballot.
What would your perfect distribution be, Ben?
To be honest, I'm fairly distribution agnostic. I just get stuck in and use it. I always find I get used to distribution itself, and it's just the software, and that. You know, you can chuck on what you want in most distributions, so anything that's not too locked down. Although, having said that, I do quite like the apt-get package manager.
Right, okay.
That it might just be because I know it better than the others, but that just seems to work for me.
Familiarity often is a big issue in these sort of things.
Yeah, Synaptic has got me out of more than a few jams. So
there was
the most widespread distro when you were in Africa?
It's a good question, actually. There was a horrific... The only place Linux was generally used was in schools. And it did annoy me a little bit how varied they were, because generally a volunteer would come out for 6 months, bring with them their favourite distro and chuck it on, which would be completely different to the distro in the school across the road and the school down the street. So there was no consistency for the teachers. CentOS was used, Ubuntu or Edubuntu was used, SUSE was used, everything was used. And I put it to the Ministry of Education that they should have a recommended distro, but they probably ignored that.
Most Ministry of Educations do.
Yeah.
I thought there was one really interesting comment when I was looking through it, was that someone said that it's not so much about the distros, it's more about the applications, and there needs to, this is something I said before on the podcast, it's more about the applications, and there needs to be more focus on the applications rather than desktop environments and package managers. That stuff's nice to have, but if you don't have the really great applications to go with it, then the rest of it's just blah.
So do you mean the application choice?
Or the quality of the applications. I don't necessarily care about having more or less applications, but I want to see applications that are good, easy to use, get the job done, let people actually accomplish real tasks. And they're out there, but you know, that's certainly an area that I think more than actual operating system features like package management, and this commenter, sorry I can't remember your name, seemed to agree with that that's the area that needs more focus from Linux these days.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, listeners. That is the end of today's...
One last thing.
Oh, nice.
Before we disappear.
America.
Yeah, so, as you know, Mummy and Daddy are off in OzCon this week, and they were going to record some stuff from out there and send it back so we could include it in there. However, it seems the Portland Ale may have got the better of them, and what will follow is the sole recording we received for inclusion. And just to say, Graham and Andrew, glad you're having a good time
over
there. They've gone gonzo, and expect a Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas style write-up of it when they get back.
I received lots of emails after the last podcast regarding the Mexican politics rant and rave I had on that particular session, and I received a lot of emails of support and I don't know, people empathizing with my sentiments. I just want to say thank you to them because I don't get a chance to do it anyway. And I try to be a little bit more useful in the following podcasts, I promised.
Okay, over to you, Andrew.
Okay, I'm recording some silence. Yes, I have a discovery of the fortnight. Well, I was round at I always make that typo in the magazine. I was round at Linus Torvald's house the other day. I used to talk about the Entwives. Yeah, I know that there are a few people in a few constituents of Tuxradar Parish who don't like to hear about Tolkien-related frippery, but we did ask him anyway because his cat is named after the Elvish name for Gandalf. What's that? Yeah, he did have an idea about the Entwives. I think he thought that they were actually in Hobbiton, but we should probably cut this anyway because it's irrelevant to all those people who don't want to hear about Tolkien-related frippery. Okay, cheers, John. Bye.